you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host for the House of Hardcore podcast, Tommy Dreamer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the House of Hardcore podcast. I'm your host. This week is one of my favorite people. Haven't seen him in a while. Afa Jr., welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me.
How are you, bud? Looking good.
Thank you.
Looking jacked in those shoulder area.
Gotta keep it shoulder high, you know.
keep the belly down. Shoot me from the high angle.
Exactly.
Question I ask everybody, which this will be an interesting answer for you. What got you hooked into the world of pro wrestling?
Well, obviously I was born into this with my dad being off of the Wild Samoan. But like growing up in the business, I've always been around the business. I've always been in the ring, around the ring. I remember a couple times, one time in particular, my dad was running a TWWF show, Trans World Wrestling Federation, which was his company before he name changed to WXW. And he booked midgets. And like I had to be like 8 years old, you know, 9 years old. So a couple of the boys were ribbing me and they talked me into jumping up and joining the match on a show. And I just remember the midgets hitting the ropes and me flying off of the ring and everybody laughing. And so I really had no interest in jumping into the ring until about 1998. It was Sports Fest, my dad's big shows that he used to run in Allentown area. I was there. WWF had a house show in Bethlehem at Stabler Arena that same night. So I was at that. And then that was the night that my dad booked The Rock, Owen Hart, D'Lo Brown, Mark Henry, Mankind. Like he booked the whole roster, it seemed like. So when we got over there, I wasn't in the business at all yet. I was still playing Little League baseball. My Little League team was there. We were supposed to go in the ring during intermission, you know, get announced as winning the championship, that sort of deal. So when I got in the ring there that night, there was like 20,000 people there. And it was like that night is the reason why I wanted to wrestle. Just being in the ring, just looking out into the crowd that night, and it was magic. So fast forward like a month later, we're overseas in Austria. On tour with my dad, and that's where I started. 13 years old, I broke really? Into business in Austria. Yeah, and it was full go from there.
How big were you at 13?
You're 13.
I don't think a lot of people realize how big you are.
Yeah. So I was about 6'2", 190 at 13. I had a little crustache, so I looked older. And so I had a tattoo also, so that helped, you know, that created the illusion of me being older.
who trained you? Your dad?
My dad and my brother Samu and my brother Lloyd. So I was training, like I knew how to bump. Like I always jumped in the ring. My dad would, you know, hey son, taught me how to bump very early. So I knew how to bump, and I was always messing around with Sean Maluda and my nephew Lance. And we were so-called backyarders, I guess. You know, we'd always be beating the crap out of each other in the front yard, backyard, basement, always. And so I always had that, you know, I guess. But formal training, it all happened in Austria when I asked my dad if I could wrestle. Because there was this kid, Chris the Bambi Killer, He's a pretty big name over there nowadays. So he spoke a little bit of English. We were about the same size, you know. So and the rest of the roster was pretty small, you know, in Europe. They weren't very big, at least where we were training at anyways. And so I asked my dad, I was like, Dad, I want to wrestle. I'll train as soon as we get back. You know, just what do I got to do to get on this card? And he was very adamant. He was like, you have to train. Like, you got to train. You can't, you know, this isn't playtime with the cousins. This is, you got to train. So I was like, yeah, sure. No problem. I'll train when I get back. And he says, no, you have to train now. So then he called my brothers up and we were in the suite of a hotel in Austria, in Graz, Austria. It was hot as hell. There's no air conditioned at this time. And we moved all the furniture out. I mean, all of it, all the beds, the you know, the couches and everything. And my brothers proceeded to kick my ass the old school way. I learned how to bump, take hip tosses, arm drags, like everything that I could do in that hotel room, I did. And after the first session, I was just like, all right, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I'll just go back to playing Little League. And my dad looked at me and he was like, it's too late. You're on the card. We need you. So,
holy crap.
Yeah.
Amazing. So
the next couple of days, it was a lot of repeating of that. It was my brothers just really, really laying it into me and, you know, making sure that I could bump. So then when I did get into the ring, it was easy, yeah. You know, but it was semi-easy. Like my first match was a battle royal and not one single person in that battle royal spoke English. So that was a challenge. Like, you know, like I was always just thrown into the ring and see how I did, you know.
Now, you're not born when your dad is in his prime, correct?
I was born in 84. So,
okay. So, I mean, yeah. You're still wrestling pretty full time.
Yeah, he was full time. My dad actually got fired when I was born because he left a taping or something like that. And, to watch me be born and he got cut. So that was the time, you know, that was
those different times.
Yeah.
Miss a booking.
Yeah. And then, so I grew up watching my dad as a head shrinker. It was my early memories of my father.
Right. Cause I remember watching your dad in his prime of primes. They were my favorite tag team at the time. I would always tell your dad and like, I was always him and my friend Jimmy Lloyd was not the wrestler Jimmy Lloyd, another Jimmy Lloyd. He was Sika, and we would, you know, do backyard headbutts and like try to do the double Samoan head drops, headbutts. Also, for its time, I want to say one of the most devastating maneuvers is the Samoan drop.
Oh, yeah.
They had built that up so big for that time. And like, I was always like, once they hit the Samoan drop, these guys are dead because they also protected finishes then.
Right. But watching a lot of the guys take it too, is a lot of
because they didn't know how.
No, they didn't know how. So they're all reaching back, trying to protect themselves. And it's just devastating.
I like when guys like, I know you've done it where I've seen you kind of land guys quick. You'll bump quicker.
Yeah.
So they don't get hurt or other guys will grab their arms so you don't break your arm.
Yeah. Because that's the first thing to go in a Samoan drop is they always reach back, you know, to try to brace for the impact. And there's too much weight coming.
And rule number one, never reach back for the mat. So everyone. And those enhancement matches were brutal back in the day.
Oh, they were great.
They didn't know how to take it. Me and Eddie Edwards do a deep dive on squash matches all the time and like how horrible some of these guys are that getting in the ring and then they're just getting beat up because it's your job to look good and they're not doing their job. So they have to beat you up. It's like they throw it to the lions.
I love it. I love it.
Yes. What about growing up at home? I remember you had told me a story about one time when you had messed up, but like, do you feel, I don't want to say had a normal childhood, but like it, my generation, I had no clue how to get into wrestling, but for you, like my daughters, they're like, oh, that's my dad. You know, right. Like there was no weirdness about it. And I'm also very laid back, but I remember you telling me a story one time when you had messed up and how terrified you were because I mean, your dad's also a known badass. In the world of wrestling. And you had told me a story about you had messed up and like you were like terrified to wait. But that's every kid, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I mean, it's like when I would mess up and my dad would really, really call me in. So there was a different level, you know, it was just, my dad would work me a lot. He would work a lot when I was a kid, you know, he would, the base, the eyes, he would pop the eyes out, you know, and when the eyes would pop out, like, it was just like, oh my God, I couldn't separate, you know, Wild Samoan from Pops, you know? And I feel like he would do that just to pop himself. Cause like he would get me, come here. What did you do? What did you do? You know what I mean? And I'm crying by the time I even get over to him. And then he'd be like, you know what? Get over here. You know what? Put your hands down. And I'd be trying to block everything. And I'd put my hands down and he'd give me a working punch. And I would be, I'd sell it too. Like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like, and it wouldn't touch me. Now go to your room. And then it was just the fear that I had of him. You know, like he would just be Wild Samoan when he had to. And that's, I think that's what kept us all in line a lot of the times. You know, yeah. was that healthy fear.
Also, your brother, like he was training. I mean, he's in WWE at what, 18, 19, tagging with his father, right?
Yep.
I got to talk to Sam because I remember, like, and then when I'm seeing it and I'm like, because I saw him wrestle live and I'm like, wait, how old are you? And he's like, no, dude, I was like 17, 18 there. And I'm like,
yeah, he was young
class. And he was just like, yeah, I think I was about 16, 17. And I'm like, and on television and having competitive matches and like wrestling Andre.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I mean, he's a whole other prodigy, but that'll be
what he filled in when he became Wild Samoan number three. It was because Uncle Sika got hurt. I believe he like broke his ankle or something like that.
Right.
So he was out for a while. And then that's when he, you know, we were on top. So, he was next in line.
That's awesome. That's shoot bloodline there for you.
Yeah.
So now you're in the business, but you also go to high school.
Yeah.
College.
Yep. I went to University of Connecticut. Yeah. Same high school as The Rock at Freedom High School. And then I also did a year at military school at Fork Union Military Academy.
And you were also a very, very good athlete.
Yeah, I was. I had a full scholarship in football. I got my first full ride offer in 10th grade at University of Pittsburgh. I was U.S. Army All-American. I played in the U.S. Army All-American Bowl with like Reggie Bush and Vernon Davis and all these guys. And then I took a full ride to UConn, where I got the most playing time out of any true freshman on the team. We had a lot of NFL talent on that team too. Dan Orlovsky, ESPN guy now. He was our quarterback. Darius Butler was on our team. Tyvon Branch. We had a lot of guys on our team that went to the league. And we went to the first bowl game in UConn history. And then I blew my knee out in that game. And then took the rehab year and ended up signing with the WWE that year.
Right. So now you're in WWE. This is when it's FCW.
It was first Deep South. I signed in October of 2006. And yeah, it was Deep South. So I was in Deep South for the very end of that before it closed down. And then I went to FCW. Yeah.
How old were you when you got signed?
22.
Wow. Yeah. I thought you were so much older, but it now makes all sense. No, yeah, it makes sense.
Been in the business forever, you know?
Yeah. I did not sign you. I believe it was either Nova or Canyon Seaman, correct?
Bill DeMott was the one who did my tryout. So I'm not sure who, I was always claimed as a Johnny Ace guy. So I guess, you know, I'm not sure who pulled the trigger and said,
well, I was just saying who was running developmental at that time.
Yeah. It was right before, that Canyon guy came in.
Okay. So it's probably Nova meets Johnny, that era.
Yeah.
So you're in Deep South. Wait, what year was this?
2006. So I got signed. My tryout day was the same class as TJ Wilson and Natty Neihardt.
So it's Nova time. You're down there. Georgia, and then it goes to Florida. Johnny closes up that developmental. You go to Florida. Mm-hmm. That's where I wrestle you.
Yep.
I remember that in like some sort of big ass bar.
Yeah, that was in Fort Myers. I don't remember the name of the bar, but I remember it was in Fort Myers.
Yep. Steve Kern is running it. How was that whole experience for you? Because, I mean, again, you're in the business. You've been around the business sometime. Like, I remember when I went to WWE, it was a big learning curve because I'm no longer in ECW anymore. And I'm a different Tommy Dreamer starting over.
Right. So that happened with me, too. So when I first signed, I was already in the business about 9 years.
Crap.
Yeah. So I thought I knew a lot. Like, I was really athletic, you know what I mean? Being a Division I football player and having the wrestling background that I've always had. But when I got to WWE, it was like I felt like a greenhorn. Like, I knew nothing about the business. Like, you know, so it was like, oh, okay, we've got to relearn everything. You know, so that was a big eye-opening experience. But I clicked on to it really well, you know, because of my experience. So I was able to right away, everything that they were teaching float right pretty much to the top of the class, because it was very obvious to guys who had the indie experience in the previous training, because we were in like a weird class where there was a lot of newcomers, like, you know, who didn't have any experience.
Yeah.
Who were just learning the business in Deep South or in FCW. And then it was a lot of us, like me and TJ, who would come from the indies, who, you know, who have a little bit of experience with the, you know, just how to do moves and stuff like that. So for those kind of guys, it was pretty easy to float to the top, you know?
Yeah, and that was the different, weirder mix when in the developmental, like, even, I mean, now, like, it's, they just want people with no experience so they can teach them their system. But then it was like a lot of people who've been doing it, a lot of people who have some experience, they know how, like, there's no day oneers, but now they just started the day oneers.
Right.
Yeah. So it is.
And it would give a lot of the talent anxiety working these day one guys too, because when all those agents would come in and stuff like that, you know, anxiety is already at a max. Everyone's trying to get noticed, trying to get on TV and stuff. And then you got to go in there and have a great match with, you know, someone who's been in the ring for like 4 weeks. So it was different.
The experienced ones that are told to go out there and have the good match.
Yep.
Must have also been hard, or drills suck to begin with, but drills, you're young, but drills 9 years in must have sucked even more.
Yeah. So I had the advantage of coming straight at a football camp.
Okay.
So like I was, you know, at least training at that, you know, we were training for the NFL. We were always training at top levels. And, but even still, I was still blow up in the ring because wrestling cardio is unlike anything else. You know, it's playing, you know, training for a 60-minute football game isn't the same as training for a 20-minute match where you're flexing every muscle and you're blowing up in your entrance.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and it's just different.
Well, it's one of my favorite times where I get to not only thank my sponsor, but talk about their product, Mango. That's right. Let's think Mango. They need to be heard. You know why? Because they help men get hard and go hard. That's right. I said it. New innovative compound that will level up your bedroom game. And hey, we all want to step it up in the bedroom, don't we? They have 3 FDA approved ingredients. It's rapid dissolving tablets. They hit the bloodstream quick for faster results. And we want to be able to go hard quicker, faster, stronger. And you can achieve that. And guess what? It's also mango flavored. Get it? Mango, but it's mango flavored. Same spelling, different pronunciation. They're individually packaged for on the go. It's 100% online, free doctor visits. No awkwardness when you're talking to a doctor. And it's discreet. You know, just gets, you know, you go on the internet, boom, you go to Mango, you get what you want. And what does that want? You want to be able to go hard and get hard. No subscription required to try our Mangos. Now, I want everyone right now to stop what you're doing. Go to mangorx.com. That's right. MangoRx.com and use the promo code GAS15, and our listeners will receive 15% off your first order. That's right. The promo code GAS15 for 15% off your first order, so you can get hard and go hard with Mango. And now let's get back to the show.
Now you get the call to get called up
what does, and it's totally different from the Samoan characters that have been portrayed in the history of wrestling. You're no longer a savage. You're no longer a cannibal. You're no longer eating raw chicken. You're a different type of character. How was all that? How did that go about? Like the whole call up, all that stuff.
Well, so I was off of junior the whole time through developmental. You know, they let me be off of junior the whole time there. Like there was some moments there where I was barefoot for a long time down there. Like I was a more modernized version of the Wild Samoan, you know, I spoke, you know, and I think that's what made me different. But when I got called up, they wanted me in boots. They wanted my hair back. They wanted me, you know, clean shaven. And that took a lot of who I was, I think, feel like, out of the character on television. You know, it was pretty uncomfortable, you know, because it was like I was always programmed to, you know, always do what gets you there, you know, always do what gets you there, always do what gets you there. Don't change, don't change, don't change. And then when you get there, they wanted you to change like everything, you know, like everything from like my gear to, you know, they took all the colors out of my gear, just plain black. Like it was just a big, big transition from the night I debuted at Unforgiven to the next night on Raw. It was two different people, you know?
Yep. And it's you, Cody.
And Ted.
And who?
And Ted Jr.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And you're all with Randy.
Yeah. So when I first debuted, it was just the three of us. They were having their feud with Crime Time, where Crime Time kept stealing their belts, whatever. So they tried to steal the belts. I came in and blasted them from the back, saved them from, you know, getting their belts taken. And then we had the little run with Crime Time, which then went into Punk and Kofi. Because like initially I jumped Punk at Unforgiven. That was my big debut. We jumped him in the back. Which ended up taking him out of his world heavyweight title match. And he ended up losing the strap that night because of it. And it was just one of those weird, weird times. And, but yeah, that was my big night. And then the next day was Raw, and I had boots on and hair slicked back. Whereas the night before I came out, you know, loud island colors, you know, hair out, you know, homage to my father. It was, they didn't need so much video footage to say, hey, this is off of Sun. Like you could just see it at that point.
You know? Oh yeah.
But that's where we're at now. So
How long were you in the main roster for?
I was on the main roster about 9 months. So went around the world twice with them and then came crumbling down.
Do you have a favorite moment or like a high of highs for you there?
Yeah. So my high of highs there, aside from, you know, the pay-per-view work, pay-per-view work was always fun and exciting. But my high of highs was the world tours, getting to wrestle D'Lo Brown all over the world. So D'Lo was always one of my top three guys that I always studied and, you know, and tried to borrow stuff from work growing up in the business. And so to be able to work him, around the world in like Paris and, you know, Germany and all these places, it was, yeah, that was awesome. And, you know, the house show vibes, we get time. So we could go out there and have a 15-minute match, 20-minute match. It's fun, versus the quickened TV pace. But on TV, it was, you know, having my first Raw singles match was against Batista. So I had a lot of like storybook stuff that happened. Like my first, when I won the FCW title, it was against Kidman, who was a Wild Samoan trained guy. My very first developmental match ever was against Tommy Suede, who was a Wild Samoan guy. My very first singles match on Raw against Batista, you know, Wild Samoan guy, like all these things happened. So I had a really good one with Batista. So that was always a memorable one for me too.
I remember Tommy. It is really cool. Just to go back to what you said too, D'Lo Brown, I don't think gets enough recognition for how good of a wrestler he was.
Right.
And another guy who is deceptively very big during his career. But I mean, I wrestled D'Lo a million times and just so smooth in the ring, heel or babyface. And again, I always say you put two really, really talented wrestlers out there, give them time and they'll tell an amazing story. out there. And I mean, I'm sure those, like you said, there were some of your favorite matches just because of the person that you're also working. And then, like you said, he's a top three for you, but it's cool that you got to see that because again, you grew up in the industry and you know, like, well, this guy's not that good, but his push is telling you he's good, as opposed to someone like D'Lo who didn't get the rocket push.
Right.
He kind of had to earn his career where he was and all that stuff.
I've always had great, like, my better matches have been against guys of like D'Lo, you know, and Tyson Kidd. He was another one who I would wrestle every day, eyes closed, you know, and he was just someone that I naturally clicked with. And I just, as cool as it is to be in the ring and hear Triple H's music hit and, you know, and hear those big pops from the scene of music and, you know, those kind of things. It's like when you get in there with two hungry guys really, really trying to grab some attention, I feel like the magic really happens then, you know?
Absolutely.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So now you leave WWE. Now what? Because for a lot of people, that's, as you know, it's devastating, but you also understand the business. So what's your mindset?
My mindset was, let's get overseas somewhere. And for me, it was Puerto Rico. So I went and I had a really good run in Puerto Rico. First time I went over there, it was by myself, as Manu, and I wrestled, you know, Carlito and Primo and all the top Puerto Rico guys. Excuse me. And then they booked us, as me and my brother Lloyd, as SOS, the Sons of Samoa. And that was supposed to be a 1 weekend shot where we were supposed to go over and help get over Thunder and Lightning as heels. Now, they're the top babyface team in the island forever. So it was a very difficult task to help get them over as heels, especially us being the Samoans who have always been heels. Now we're being called in as babyfaces over there. But somehow, some way, it ended up working. And we ended up getting a 3-year run out of a 1 weekend booking, you know, just by getting over. So that was really fun. I did a lot of work in Europe too, in Belgium, did some work in South Africa and stuff like that. So primarily for me, it was all overseas work after WWE, like immediately after WWE.
Total sidebar. I remember I come into Puerto Rico and I'm traveling with you and Lloyd. Yeah. And we're driving to one other side of the island. All three of us, I'm crammed in the back. You two guys are in the front. And you guys are talking about this place to eat and it's going to be so great. And you're building this up that this, like, this really, really great place to eat. And we're driving up to the you know, through the mountain of Puerto Rico, wherever. And we eventually pull up and, like, we get off to the side of the road and I don't see a restaurant. I don't see anything. And I'm like, where are they taking me? And then we go, like, to the side of the road / mountain. And it's a dude making food out of his trunk of his car.
That's right.
And it's fish and it's chicken. And I'm a little leery, but I was like, and when I tell you, it was some of the best food I ever had out of some random dude's trunk out of his car. But you guys built, what a payday. Like, and Lloyd's talking about the fish and, like, all this stuff, and an aluminum foil that eventually comes up. You guys order for me, I'll take this, and then sure as shit, that shit was dope.
That's right. You gotta eat local when you go to those places, you know, especially in the islands, you know, in Puerto Rico and Hawaii and stuff like that. If you don't know those little roadside spots, you're really missing out. you're really missing out.
And then on the way back, because, you know, you're last, we've got to go. And it's only like, it's much different with traffic going there as opposed to home. And they're like, hey, we're going to stop at this other spot. And we stop at this other spot. And when I tell you, there's dogs everywhere, wild dogs everywhere. And I'm like, where are these guys taking me now? It's late. We go and it's, you know, the three of us walking, which is a sight unknown. Some 24-hour place that serves, like, I think I got like empanadas and something like this.
Oh, yeah.
And
right on the water.
You're like, yeah, feed the dogs, but don't touch them because they're wild dogs. And like, you know, you don't want to buy them. Plus, they got diseases. But yet they're just walking around this food establishment.
Hey, it's their island, you know.
And sure as shit, the food, the empanadas were awesome. And everything I ate was great.
That's right. And if it was daytime, you would have seen the best view ever because we were right on the water that night, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So after all that, because, I mean, and again, you do indies when you're around in the States, but you said for the next 3 years, you're doing all this stuff overseas. Now, you're gone from WWE. How many years?
I left in 2009. So,
yeah.
So, it's been a while.
Same time as me, you left a little later. Mm-hmm. After I did, you have, what are you doing now? You have your own promotion.
Yep. Right now,
your own training school.
Yes, sir.
Yep. So plug it. Tell me.
So, I'm running Battlefield Pro Wrestling. We run monthly shows, and where we have student shows broken down into kind of our developmental brand where we can get our students, their reps on smaller shows. That's called the Futures. So we run those also monthly. And then we have Battlefield Pro Wrestling, which we have pay-per-view events on the Premier Streaming Network. And I run the Battlefield Pro Wrestling Performance Center, which is, I basically built it off of all my travels and learning experiences, you know, in my career. So it has a lot of WWE feel mixed with, you know, some Dr. Tom, some Bill DeMont, some Wild Samoan training, you know, some things that I picked up from the Hearts and stuff like that. So kind of blended it all into one facility. We have a full 24-hour gym. We have, you know, two event spaces, one, the event center, and then we also have the dojo side that fits about 250 people. So that's where we run our Futures events. And it's going great. We have right now, 44 students, and we train 4 days a week, and, you know, it's all about ring time and reps here with us. So, and bumps, you know, the Samoans are known for taking big bumps.
And I've been there. It is an impressive facility. And like you say, like, it's not, you know, you hear we heard your own war story of learning how to do it in a hotel room,
right?
Hey, here's a garage. You open up the garage door and there's a ring. But I mean, this is one grade A type of, like, a performance center. It's a facility. I mean, it's got, you also have people where you train like with promos and like you have all these different areas, but then the gym is amazing gym.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. A lot of work. So we have everything that I try to put everything in there, that we need. We have the tanning bed in there. We have a sauna in there. At one point we even had a barber in there that would, you know, give haircuts and stuff like that. We got, a massage, person that comes in there. We got chiropractors that come in there. Like, it's a one-stop shop, you know? And like I said, we have the event center too, which is very similar to like the FCW arena. You know, at first we had the ring right behind that wall, like in the locker room space. But it's hard to keep that one ring back there when we have 44 students. So we had to upgrade, get a bigger space, more rings. And, you know, we're growing. And it's very exciting just to watch all these guys, you know, grow in the business. You know, guys who come in some with some experience. We have guys with no experience coming in. It's just incredible to watch their journey.
Agreed. And glad that you got Brutus some paid gigs during his time as the barber. a delayed pop. Where's Dreamer?
There is the pop. There it is.
Well, how do we find you on social media?
Social media? I'm Samoan Storm. You can find me on that on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And on Instagram, we are Battlefield. So,
And that's your... all your social medias for your school and everything?
Yeah. You can connect it through everything through there. You can search us, Battlefield Pro Wrestling, over Facebook, Instagram. And we don't have a Twitter yet for the school, but we're getting one.
Hey, I forgot to ask this in the beginning, because again, it's a different upbringing, but I don't want to assume. Did you have a favorite wrestler growing up?
Yeah, my favorite wrestler was my brother, Samu. He was always my favorite. Aside from him, though, like markout guy, it was Bret Hart. I loved Bret Hart, big Bret Hart guy. And the Great Muta. He was my other guy.
Those are three amazing people. Bret Hart wrestles your brother. Who do you cheer? Straight up mark time.
I was straight up mark time. I would always root for my brother. See, that's the thing that turned me though against Bret was he was wrestling my brother one time and my dad popped up to, you know, cause interference or something like that. And Bret drop kicked my dad. Oh. And then that was it. And then I wasn't so much of a Bret Hart fan after that night. And that's a shoot. Because my dad never smartened me up, man. When I was a kid, he raised me to believe it as it was presented, you know?
That generation, that was what they did. And like, I love hearing that. It's good and it's bad, but it also makes you respect how much he did protect, because they didn't smarten up his own son. Even, dude, for me, my mom just recently passed. Like, my mom would always be like, people would say, like, how is that fake? And she'd be like, you don't understand all the bruises. You don't understand all, you know, what I see. She goes, there's no way you can fake that. Right. And I never, like, even when wrestlers would be putting, my mom for some reason hated wrestlers putting their foot on my throat, and she would turn away, and I'd be like, Mom, I'm fine. I'm literally sitting next to you. And she's like, why would you allow somebody to do that? Right. And I was just like, because, like, I okayed it. She goes, well, you shouldn't. And she's like, it's wrong. And I'm like, well, now you're Mark. But right. I would be, even when I'm saying, but I'm okay, she didn't accept it because he's stepping on you. And I was like, yes, they are stepping on me.
Right.
But I know how to protect myself. And if I didn't like it, I'll just push his heel off. Yeah. Well, you shouldn't let that happen. But I never said, Ma, he's never touching me, or Ma, this. And that's my own mother.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's different. And I can't smarten her up now. And it is. I mean, but you've also lived it. It is everything we always do is real.
Yeah, for sure.
We feel it. We feel it from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed.
Unfortunately, we feel it when no one else is watching, you know.
Ooh, that's a heavy one.
Like, that's when we feel it, because like that adrenaline kicks, and you know, when them lights and cameras go on, we're not feeling it then. We feel it when no one else is watching.
I'm going to end it on that, because that's a heavy line. Well, I appreciate you. I love you. It's good to catch up and see you. And I loved your story, because even though I've known you for a long time, I didn't know some of those things. And that's one of my favorite things about doing these things. Thank you very much. I hope to see you again. And that's this week's episode of the House of Hardcore podcast with Afa the Wild Samoan.
Thank you for having me, brother.
Love you.